Hello there, welcome to Sample Access Podcast. One more time for the best podcast in the world. We're back. Season 6 recap, episode 78, starting from episode 66. This is a lot of jargon, but come with us as we go along. What we do here, for starters, is that we review music from the ages past through the eyes of samples that are being done today by New Age Cats. So, my name is Buiga, and Nelson is on the other side. We're recording virtually, needless to say. And today we're doing a recap of the last 13 episodes of the podcast, starting from episode 66 to episode 77. That's about 12 years. Yes, Nelson, what's up now?
All good. To all the guys listening, thank you very much for sticking with us. And it's been another long season. I think this has to be like the longest, maybe quarter that we've ever done, you know, on the podcast. So I've done 6 quarters now, and it's been amazing all through. But this one feels like it was stretched beyond, the unimaginable, but we still got it done. And trust me, we're not stopping. We're going all the way. We still have more episodes to come around. So we would be celebrating 100, 120, 150, you know, till the numbers don't even matter anymore, you know, at some point. But, of course, we're back again. Happy boys. I don't know why I feel like we should probably start saying that more often. We're the happy boys. We're always happy when we're doing this. It's always exciting for us to always come out. Even though we are recording virtually right now, it's still, you know, all love is still great, and we enjoy every single part of making all of these episodes. But then, let's get straight into it. We started 66, and, after 13 episodes right now, we are down to 78, or 78. Is that right, Guiga?
So we're reviewing 12 episodes, and now you can go to Hot Stepper. Here comes the Hot Stepper, which was episode 66. We dropped this one July
27, 2022. Oh, yeah. That's one of these I was going to even talk about when we started doing this episode. The fact that this is probably like the first quarter we're talking about, and we have to, like, there's a year in between the quarter. Do you get?
Yeah, I get you. Go on.
Look at it. Like, although it's not a complete year, but it felt like from 66 down to 77 that we're in now, we've had a lot of, you know, spaces in between. So there's been a lot of breaks. Episode 66, we call that Here Comes the Hot Stepper. Interesting episodes, you know, I think about an hour long, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember exactly how long it was, but yeah, an hour 30 minutes there about MC8, Alex O, Inika Mose, Wanda Cole, and Don Jazzy. Packed episode that had a lot. And I'm sure we spoke a lot. That's why we spent over an hour discussing it. MC8, big man, big gem. Currently, even in the world today, he's still, you know, up there as an OG, still giving notes to young stars, still talking to them, still giving them gist and all of that. But of course, MC8 in this one actually took something that we felt was off Alex O. Alex O used to be one of the big names in Nigeria in 1990. From the Do It album, he released the song Do It in the Name of Love, that was released in the year 1990. And the main beat of the song, the progression of the song, sounded a whole lot like what was redone and made to a hip-hop beat for MC8. 8 spelt as E, capital E-I-H-T, you know? So it was really cool for us to actually discover that one. Quite exciting for me. I really enjoyed that episode because we got to talk about, you know, A Menace to the Society, which was the movie in which the song was used. And also talk about Alex O that we know so well. For a couple of people that are probably, you know, their 20s and early 30s, they probably know Alex O from listening to Phase album, that was released sometime in, I think, 2006 or thereabouts. And Guiga, can you please help me with the year? I don't know whether you can remember Phase album that he spoke about. Alex O,
my Pacheco. That's originality. It has to be 2007 or 8.
So basically, yeah, we continued with that and we worked on that particular one. And like I said, it was actually a great one, you know, a very interesting episode that I love so much. And after talking about Alex O as well, spoke about the fact that he came into the music industry, did his beat, and he left, you know, a legend, because of course you have to be a legend to be able to. There's no conversation. I mean, I still think that we have a lot of conversations to date. And when we want to talk about Nigeria in a time frame for music, Alex O would always pop up, like DZK Faola and the likes. He would always pop up. So he's a legend in his right. And apart from that, then we switched on to something else that was really cool. Wanda Cole and Don Jazzy, The Kick. When you hear The Kick, that jam, is a huge jam, big jam. I think that should be 2013 or 12, thereabouts. I can't remember the year right now, but of course, you want to listen to everything we said about that. It's in episode 66. And Ini Kamuzi, Here Comes a Hot Stepper. That one is, that one is definitely meaty, meaty. I love that song so much. And, you know, it's a song that you want to rap to all the time. And I think Wanico interpolated and did some of the sounds, and he made perfect sense. He made the kick a premium sound. I really enjoyed it too as well. I think probably one of my best episodes this season. But one thing about this particular season that we have done is that back-to-back, we're giving heavy episodes. So every episode was a gem. Every single one of them was a gem. I think that's about it for episode 66. Now let's just keep going like that.
67 is maybe one of my favorites in this. Wow, interesting that the one in my mind is just after that. It's been so long I've forgotten the itinerary. 67, Papa Wemba, Rumba, Sukus, and African music. About that, I love that episode. I loved researching that episode because I had to watch a lot of documentaries of Papa Wemba's work and lifetime, from Congo to France to Belgium and back to Congo. You know, his legend, his legacy, some of these things that you don't get to see in our spheres, because, you know, we're in Nigeria. Our default mode and habitat is Nigerian music, old and new, sometimes American, sometimes UK music. But music from the Congo is just once in a while, maybe at a party, and we need to do the Makossa. And there's an occasion that calls for that, so there's a throwback session that calls for that. So it's a rarity. So I appreciated the fact that episode 67 was when we discussed Papa Wemba, Rumba, Sukus, and African music legacy. I think it was important that we mention someone outside Nigeria who also has an interesting legacy. When you talk about music in Africa, Nigeria is very dominant. The next name or the next country that would come to mind is probably South Africa, and then Ghana, and then maybe Kenya or East Africa. But Congo has a very important place in African music history, in African music legacy. And I think Papa Wemba, in his time, I'm not sure if it was French or Belgian that we're speaking, but, you know, the language and the theme of the music is called Sukus and Rumba, and some of it's Makossa. So it was interesting to look at some of the documentaries that mirrored or tried to document the life of Papa Wemba and his legacy. A song like Yolini, for instance, is my favorite from him. And then I got to find out more songs that are very interesting, very beautiful songs. You know, the use of the guitar in this African rhythm, and, you know, the stage performance and his activism as well. He had a special place in the minds of the young people of Congo. There was a time he was like an activist, was talking about the life of young people. He even helped some of them go to France, go to Belgium, and escape the poverty in Congo at the time. So his story goes in that way. And of course, part of his story was that he was a fashion icon, very exuberant, very extravagant with his fashion and his, you know, what's he called, his elite lifestyle, so to speak. Yeah, he also had a brief episode in prison, maybe 3 months in Paris. And that's just about it. We discussed this at length, Papa Wemba, Rumba, Sukus, and African music legacy. You should check it out if you haven't. And that's one of the episodes that we did in the last 12 episodes. Nelson, check the next one.
Yeah, before we leave the Papa Wemba story, I remember that there was one thing that I enjoyed about that particular episode. The fact that I found out about Sapir. I don't know whether you remember that, Guega, that we were comparing it with, you know, the Sapa of the time, but it was Sapir because it means that, you know, you use all your money to look good and look fresh. I don't know whether I remember that particular part of our research.
I don't remember.
It was the Papa Wemba thing. That was one of the things that stuck to me, you know, because we had to see a couple of old videos on YouTube talking about how these guys would save up, even borrow money just to look good, you know, with their blazers on or their suit on, looking all, you know, peng and very cool. So, like, it was such a thing for them at the time. I'm sure pink was probably not the right, you know, adjective to use, but you get what I'm saying, basically. These guys were cool guys. Right. They smelled good. I mean, they would say they used a lot of perfume and all of that just to look good and represent the culture. By far, it was a crazy time for them, basically. And Papa Wemba was probably one of those guys that actually pioneered this thing as well. Let's move on now and talk about, I think after that episode, episode 67, the next episode we had was episode 69, where we had Asha, 68, I beg your pardon. We had Asha, we discussed Davido's 1 milli sampling, a progression from Dua Lipa's Be The One, you know, and also Zinoliski sampling Asha Be My Man on Loving You. I really like this episode for so many reasons, apart from the fact that we got to you know, delve into Zinoliski's music space again. And I think, you know, even though she's not, you know, in that level of top tier musicians for like a time, you know, he has always been around, but he's progressing, basically, and he has touched as much as possible. I've talked about him touching something with Wally Thompson, doing it very well. He has done a couple more, but you know, this Be My Man was quite evident, you know, in this particular song called Loving You. And I really liked it, you know. I think it was a good job, great sampling. You know, I don't like to always, some samples are good, some samples are bad, and some samples are just bleh. I'm sure you understand that, Gwega. So you would want to say, okay, you have to give props to the samples that are good and very and well put together. And I think Asha's Be My Man being sampled on Loving You by Zinoliski was not bad at all. It sounded like, you know, like over the telephone voice snippet of that particular ooh, be my man. And it really worked, you know, gelled with the song. And I think the production of that song was really good as well. Nigeria is really, you know, upping their game in terms of the production, next level stuff. Guys have been doing it for so many years, from LD's, you know, LD's Return of the King album till this point. It's been crazy all the way. The production levels are out of this world. Now, apart from that, we also picked on something very interesting as well. This Davido's 1 milli sampling, quite interesting. I wasn't the one who discovered this. This was all Goyega. Goyega, I'm not even sure you can, because I'm sure I've gone through so many songs now, you probably don't remember, but you were the one that picked this up.
You're talking about Davido's 1 milli and
Dua Lipa's Be The One.
Yes, I don't know how. This is so random. I don't know how I came about it. I think I was listening to something from Dua Lipa, maybe a couple songs from Dua Lipa, and I really can't remember how it happened. But you know, we work in radio, and so come across two songs. So I think I came across that song and I just peeped it, like, okay, Dua Lipa, this sounds like Davido, and I was able to connect it together.
But this one was more of a production thing, and you know, it wasn't bad as well, because I would have never noticed, being that I'm not the biggest fan of Dua Lipa, although I love a couple of her songs like Levitate and some of the stuff she has done. But I'm not like an avid listener of Dua Lipa. But of course, like Gwega said, we're on radio, so we have the opportunity to listen to a lot of songs, loads of songs. We are digesting, consuming them on almost on a daily basis. Sometimes you hear new songs that people probably never hear in their life, and then you see connections. And this one was actually very interesting, because the moment I found out about this, I realized, this is so similar. The beginning of the song, you know, and I also want to remember that Davido's 1 milli was actually written by Adekunle Gold, which was quite classy when you think about Adekunle Gold as an artist and what he has done over the years, which is really, really cool. So it's something that I'm sure a lot of people will want to remember for a long time. In fact, that song came off a good time, which is probably one of the best albums from Davido, really. Probably one of the best albums for me. He has done a couple more, but that one was like stood there for me, and I really like that. Episode 68 was actually a good one for us. I always love all our episodes, but this episode 69 is quite something very, very interesting. Let me allow Gwega to continue on this one. Gwega, episode 69.
So I have a problem now. It's morning here and the cocks won't stop crowing, right? The chickens are crowing around me and I don't like the sound. So when you hear it in the background, there you go. I don't know if we can go on, or you are going to take the next one while we wait for them to shut
up. Please, let's go, please. Cockscrewing is all good.
Oh, yeah, now. Let's go. So, episode 69 Am I right? Is it 69? Yes. Basuma, Bobby Vinton, and Akon. We had Adams Murphy, who is a fan or a big supporter of the podcast, a friend of mine as well. We had him join us on this episode, and he talked about Akon and a little bit about Bobby Vinton. So this is how it went. Instead of the regular two pairs, we had Basuma sampling Akon and then Akon sampling Bobby Vinton. So it was like three generations, four different songs in that regard. So Basuma's album Fuji Motion had a particular song, Akorinde Basuma Ajibola, and this is just the first 4 minutes or 3 minutes of that particular track. So it's usually two tracks per album for, you know, what you can call LPs for Fuji artists or Juju artists, instead of five tracks or seven tracks in other genres or by other new age artists. Artists in the Fuji genre who make music for, you know, what you can call long plays, LPs, who hail people in their songs, who do, you know, long plays essentially. So in the first part of this first, I think track one or track two, Fuji Motion has three tracks. So one of the tracks has Akorinde Basuma. So Akorinde, we can call it Akorinde. The first part of it samples Belly Dancer by Akon. This is Basuma, Babali, Alumbo, you know, and all the details, right? I find it interesting that whatever time it was, Akon's Belly Dancer was big everywhere. You know, this was the time Akon was on top of his game. And Basuma, of course, being African Puff Daddy, in tune with the sounds in Nigeria and abroad, they were very...
African Puff Daddy. That's what's up.
So he was in tune with some of those 50 Cent sounds, some of those hip-hop records, right? And there's we still talk about the marriage between Fuji and hip-hop, both in America and in Nigeria, reverse engineering. So at some point, we'll talk about that. So Basuma and people like Saeed Oshoogba, Saeed Oshoogba not so much, but Basuma is very in tune with hip-hop music, and he embeds it in his music, just to show you that, or I guess he was trying to tell the listener or the audience, his audience, that look, I'm also in tune with that genre of music. I'm hip, I'm outside, you know what's up. So I find it interesting that, you know, that happened, and we discussed about it, Basuma's album, Basuma's discography, and Akon's Belly Dancer. On the flip side was Bobby Vinton, the iconic song Mr. Lonely, being remade or covered or extrapolated or sampled essentially by Akon on Lonely, the track Lonely is one of Akon's first biggest hits. Lonely and Locked Up was very popular at the time before he then, you know, moved into hip-hop proper, hip-hop chorus guy, hip-hop hook merchant for the likes of Snoop Dogg and Eminem and the rest of them. So that was pretty much that episode. I think the most important part of this episode was the fact that we talked about Bobby Vinton's story and the fact that, you know, and the 1960-esque storyline that we had researching Bobby Vinton and learning about his music and, you know, his story, how the song came about, the power of the song, Mr. Lonely, I Have Nobody, you know, these old songs and how they make us feel. Yeah, it's like Nina Simone's Cinnamon or any of those iconic songs. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, solid one from Guiga. Episode 69, quite interesting episode as well. Episode 70, Ludwig van Beethoven for the kids. Guiga, I need to ask you this, and I'm sorry this is coming random, but why the heck did you name this episode this?
Now I can't remember, but I know that Ludwig van Beethoven was the center of the episode, and we're talking about Beethoven's symphonies, and I think it was the symphony number 4 or 7, whatever it was. It's essentially to talk about what the OGs did for the kids, and I remember that we had Meek Mill and Nas on this episode. I think it's just random, and I wanted to acknowledge Beethoven for being an influence for everybody else that came after.
Yeah, that's a good one. I actually like the name. It caught my eye, so that's why I had to ask. Because of course, like, you know, you wouldn't see something like this and just jettison that basically. But Ludwig van Beethoven talking about for Elise, and also, you know, the fact that Nas's hit record, that is I Know I Can, sampled for Elise. I remember for a while we were always thinking for Elise and Symphony 5 were the same thing. I don't know whether I remember that, Goyega. You know, when we were thinking, you know, there was a time where we were kind of like mixing it up at the early stages when we were trying to figure out exactly what the sound was. We thought for it was Symphony 5.
I really can't remember, but I know.
Guys, it's not with me on that level. All right.
So Symphony, I don't even know the itinerary of the symphony is made by Beethoven, but the pop.
You know, there was a conversation where we had, we're like, "Oh, is this for Elise or is this?" I mean, we knew the sound, but we didn't know exactly what it was supposed to be called, whether it was Symphony 5 or for Elise. But of course, after like further research, we discovered that okay, the sound that we all know as was actually for Elise, which was what Nas picked off, you know, to do I Can, which was a solid stuff. I don't know whether it was Hit Boy that did this one, but I'm sure we spoke about the producer and everything. And the story was quite long. You know, we spoke for about 56 minutes, talking about everything about Beethoven that we could lay our hands on at the time. And also, you know, Nas's hit record, that is I Can. And the other side of the pod had Mick Mill's sampling Hit Me Now by Nas. And I don't know, Boyega, I always forget. Was the song that Mick Mill sampled, was he used as a proper song, or it was part of an EP? I can't remember right now.
I think it was part of a promotional run by Mick before an album came. So it wasn't really pushed. It wasn't really pushed, but I know I heard the song. It's like Hate Me. It's titled along the lines of Hate Me. So, yeah.
So, yeah, but because I remember that it was some sort of EP, some sort of, you know, extra playlist stuff, extended playlist stuff and all of that. But, you know, it was quite cool. I liked the sampling. The sampling was not, it was not solid, if you ask me, but it was very hip-hop. Maybe not using, because now thinking about it, I always remember the fact that David Bowie said something in the mid-90s that hip-hop artists are probably the smartest and most intelligent samplers ever. And I'm sure Guiga would agree to that. When you hear a couple of songs, anytime a hip-hop artist is trying to walk around doing a song and they're sampling, and they do it properly, it's always gold. And even though this one wasn't probably the best, it was rough a little bit for Mick Mill, the message was passed. You know, getting somebody iconic like Nas, you know, off that record and doing that particular sample and making it good was really, really cool. But I think the highlight of this particular episode was actually for Elise. We spoke about it a lot. For Elise is big, but let me not talk too much. Let me not, you know, get too much into it. Just take your time, go back to episode 70. Solid stuff. You're going to enjoy every part of it. It was a great episode. Where you go?
Meanwhile, episode 5s and 0s are for international. So episode 70 was meant to talk about international acts, not Nigerian, and that was America. I don't know why all our international episodes always fall on America. As much as possible, I believe we should try to look at other continents, other spaces, you know, other music markets. That said, episode 71, I Wish I Knew Joromi, ad music. Ad music implies advertising. I Wish I Knew Joromi. That was 2-in-1. And I think the titling, which is something I like anyway, the titling did not do justice to the content, quote unquote. I like it that way. I don't know if you do. But I think sometimes you just want to title differently.
Probably one of our most solid episodes. And when I mean most solid episodes, I mean that for every word of it. It was really strong. It's an episode I've listened to over and over again. I think maybe, you know, of course, we can't toot our own horn right now, but I think we did a very good job in putting that together.
That's amazing. And I never really thought about it like that. And I have favorite episodes. And I have favorite episodes that I go back to listen to. I'll probably do that for this one now, episode 71. Meanwhile, I have some of my favorites would be the Distant Relatives one, episode 40. Another one would be the last one we did with Dele Adeyanju. With Dele Adeyanju, very solid. There is the Fuji, the Sound episode. episode 37, I guess. And then I think a few other ones. But now that you're making a case for I Wish I Knew Jeromy, I'm going to believe you and add it to my top five. Back to the breakdown. I Wish I Knew Jeromy talked about I Wish I Knew What It Could Feel to Be Free, a song by Nina Simone, or I guess another writer before Nina Simone made the song, and then Lighthouse Family. Now that I'm talking about it, I see why you would say this is a special episode, right? Lighthouse Family, you know, a Nigerian brother based in the UK with another partner. Tunde Bayewu, yes. So yes, we talked a lot about, not a lot, but we talked extensively about Nina Simone being sampled by Lighthouse. Please remind me of the man who wrote the song. I think there was an initial writer before before Nina Simone made the song. But in any way, I Wish I Knew What It Would Feel Like to Be Free. That was the first part of the episode. And why did we make it an ad episode? An ad episode because Skybank, a defunct Nigerian bank, used that song in an advertising, you know, in an advert, and they essentially covered the song to sell their bank. So that was why we made it an advertising episode. We have one previous advertising episode as well with Katrina and the Waves and Ovaltine, as well as Kanye and Guinness. This was a different one. That's the first part. The second part is Jeromy Came to Play, which is now Jeromy is a song by Nigeria's famous guitar boy Sir Victor Wifo, who made Jeromy years ago in the 60s or 70s, I believe. And a Nigerian brand in Star Lager would then incorporate the song and make it into an advertising, tell the Nigerian story, or tell their story along the lines of starting and growing up to 60 years, spending 60 years in the Nigerian market. And they employ that song by Sir Victor Wifo to tell the story. So I find out very interesting how music meets advertising. And we also get to that on the Sample Access episode 71. You should listen to that and have a good time.
Yeah, episode 71, like Gbega said, solid stuff. I enjoyed every part of it as well. I you know, talking about it right now, I'm sorry, I just like to talk about this whenever I have the opportunity to. Researching music and getting to learn about new stuff is probably one of the most exciting times for me, because you know that discovery, that's basically who I am as a person, finding out new things, getting to know new stuff, very, you know, it's out of this world, basically. I have to say that. And the ad music, and the fact that this was named ad music, I Wish I Knew Jeromy, it would feel like, oh yeah, just one of those episodes. But trust me, that's one episode you are definitely going to love. 59 minutes of greatness. Now let's move on to episode 72.
Before we go on, I think we should mention Dr. Billy Taylor. I was trying to remember the name. Dr. Billy Taylor is the one who originally wrote and composed I Wish I Knew How to Be Free before Nina Simone made the song. So that's the long line of the iconic song. Just like the Malaika song from Tanzania to South Africa to Ayefele in Nigeria, 1999, you know, thereabouts. It started from 1960s all the way down to today. So yeah, I think it was important to mention Dr. Billy Taylor's impact.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, Gbega. Well, let's get into it right now. Okay, episode 72, Sample of the Year, Last by Burna Boy. Burna Boy sampling Toni Braxton. Now, this one was a long, long, long episode. I wouldn't want to talk too much about this because I feel like this is like a known episode. A lot of people know about this episode, apart from the fact that, you know, Last was a hit. And not just a regular hit. It was a major hit. So it took something off, you know. It had a life of its own, and it was everywhere. So we decided to talk about the breakdown of how that sampling happened, what led to it, you know, from our perspective. Because, of course, we're not in the same room with Burna Boy, and we're not familiar with Burna Boy like that. So we just took it step by step. We explained, and we broke it down to an extent. And for a 50-minute episode, it was quite good. Last being like I said, being a big hit, and we breaking it out little by little. Burna Boy sampling Tony Braxton. Now, I'm a big fan of Tony Braxton. I have to say this again. Tony Braxton is probably, hands down, to me, one of the most underrated artists of all time. And I'm saying this whilst a lot of people say, ah, come on, they have given our flowers. But no. Boyega, I'm sure you're going to agree with me on this. When we want to call a list of people with amazing voices that has done it, been there, done it, most times when people will call 10, 15, 20 people before they call Tony Braxton, yes or no? Do you agree with me that Tony Braxton might probably be one of the most underrated artists of all time?
I don't know her that much, so I might not be able
to. This is exactly why I think she's one of the most underrated artists of all time. You have already made my point. Thank you.
Why is that good? Why is she that good? Is she that good?
Break my heart. Tony Braxton is an amazing writer, an amazing singer. Her vocal levels out of this world. You need to see a documentary about Tony Braxton. She has been there, done it all.
Give me context. Give me context. I'm going to ask
you. I'm going to use one song. You remember the song, Unbreak My Heart?
Hold on. You're going to help me understand. Me, I don't know. I'm the novice here. I just know a few names. I'm going to mention three names, including Tony, and you will tell me why she's special, right? Now, Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, Janet Jackson, Tony Braxton, rank them in terms of impact and quality of music, vocal strength, all of the above.
All right, so Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, Janet Jackson, I like the fact that you called all these women, and I feel like this should be our peers, and I'll say that for certain reasons. Whitney Houston, hands down number one for so many reasons, apart from the fact that she's amazing, she did her good stuff, she was great, you know, in the music industry. Even before she died, she got better and better. She aged like fine wine in terms of her voice and every other thing around her, you know, except from the negative part. But of course, amazing woman to the core. I'll put her as number one. Number two, I would put Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson, for the fact that she came off the shadow, she came off, you know, being just one of the musicians in Jackson 5 that was already bigger already. So she came off the, you know, the big spotlight of the Jackson family and made something of herself. Probably one of the highest selling record female recording artists of all time. So she's there. Now, Mariah Carey. Whilst I love Mariah Carey, I would say this, and this is for me, I'd say Mariah Carey should be number three because of impact, solid impact. But I think Tony Braxton would be somewhere between number five and number six of any list, and I'll tell you why. She sold 70 million records. She's legit probably one of the biggest, best female selling record artists of all time. Her vocal range is insane. And thirdly, you know, she had a life that was probably not, you know, not the most glamorous. If you understand what I'm trying to say, Boyega, not the most glamorous. But I think it was because she didn't have enough PR. That's why she's not reverted as one of the best of all time. And I'm saying this because that's why I said, when I said underrated, I'm saying she's underrated because I know in a lot of discourse, when they have proper conversations, most people would forget her name. You understand? But then remember that, you get what I'm saying? That's the context of what I'm saying. But she has sold over 70 million records. That's a whole lot. Think about people like, you know, maybe some other artists you share. For some of the artists we put up there as probably all-time best, they're selling 80 million, selling 90 million. She's not far off. You get what I'm saying? Probably one or two diamond records away from being probably one of the best. So you get the context of what I'm saying.
I feel you 100%.
Yes, but I mean, it is what it is. I love her so much. I appreciate her. And I'm sure Burna Boy does as well. That's why that's, you know, that stuff, that music is a classic. And will always be a classic.
Amazing stuff. Let's go to 73. Lingua Afrobeat. I can't exactly remember the details of this one, but I think it was, yes, now I remember it. Lingua Afrobeat talked about the language employed or most popular, or all the languages familiar that we know with Afrobeat. And that episode was mainly Yoruba. I mean, because episode was in Yoruba. Episode talked about Yoruba being the prime language of Afrobeats. And we can trace that to the fact that Lagos is the capital of Afrobeats. We can also trace that to the fact that the practitioners of Afrobeat are mostly Yoruba. Other musicians in Afrobeat who are not Yoruba, of course, Igbo, Port Harcourt boys, Abuja boys, whatever, from other parts of the country, they have to embed themselves to whatever Lagos is saying. And that's, you know, Lagos is cosmopolitan. A lot of people from other walks of life, other places around the world, around the country, there is still that default culture. The Yoruba culture is still embedded because that's where Onimushi of Mushi, the king of Oshodi, Elegushi, the people who are the custodians of culture in Lagos are the Yoruba. So the influence will rub off in the entertainment and cultural spaces. So we can see why Afrobeat predominantly is Yoruba based. It doesn't mean there are no songs in other languages, but the predominant one is Yoruba. So we talked about that on Lingua Afrobeat episode 73. We also talked about the fight, the seeming fight on Twitter among people who say, who talk about Yoruba tax. So they would say this artist is popping because he's Yoruba. They are trying to claim that other artists who may be better than Yoruba artists don't get the props. But that again has been dispelled. It's not true. Rema is not Yoruba, he's from Benin. He didn't need to speak too much Yoruba before he blew up. And the list, there are many other artists like that who came from other spaces. Omalay is winning. Talk about Timaya, came to Lagos. Chimaya came to Lagos, he did not necessarily need to speak Yoruba, and he blew up, he had his moment. There are many other people like that. People like Chike, I don't even need to mention names. It's there. It's just that bottom line, the predominant language would be Yoruba. So yeah, that's pretty much what we did on that episode.
This episode we're about to talk about right now is episode 74. And strangely, weirdly, that's the first episode I've done. It's been a long time that after the gap, we came back with our Lord Jesus is our ladder. And, you know, that already sends you into a particular sphere because we know what we're talking about. You know, we discussed Olamide's YBN sampling. That's sampling Sister Agnes's, Signal Agnes Eros ladder, you know, and then we just, you know, spoke about Olamide as an artist. And One of the things I loved about the episode was the fact that we took our time to pay tribute to the man that is Olamide, giving him his flowers, you know, whilst he's still here, talking about all the great things he has done and the great things he will continue to do because she's amazing and she wouldn't stop. It just keeps on going over and over again. And I think this was one of the episodes where I'm sure Gwega would be happy about this one. This is one of the episodes that Gwega actually agreed that, yes, Maybe just, you know, I mean, she knew Olamide was that guy, probably a decline in the works or something, but he thought back and said, yeah, Olamide is that guy, right, Gwega?
Yeah, this was where I admitted finally that, yes, he is him. When I say he's him, I was almost going to go back to my days of slying or disrespecting Olamide for not being thoroughly hip-hop. But this was when I admitted, like, yo, after doing all of that consistently for years, I think we can just speak about him in the light of being, you know, being that guy who made music through rap, starting as a rapper and breaking through with everybody else. He still raps, and that's the good thing. He still raps, but he made it appealing. I don't want to go back to my back and forth ranting on Olamide's style of music, but yes, your question was that, did I admit he was great? Yes, absolutely. Olamide is that guy in terms of the music he made and his impact on the industry. Yes.
Yeah, so we took our time to, you know, pay tribute to Ma. Like I said, we spoke about Olamide so much, and we gave a lot of info. I don't want to give too much info because this one too was also a long episode, so I'd like for you guys to just take your time out. And, you know, remember that our Lord Jesus, we spoke about how, you know, the song was released a long time ago, then came back again, and then came back again, you know, in a new era where social media increased in terms of popularity and people using it. And, you know, we're always in a space where there's a new app that is popping. So all of that worked well, and it's been magic all the way. And I think Olamide is probably one of those artists that has enjoyed, you know, that some of the artists that have enjoyed that improvement in social media people like people like Stanley Okoye from the Nigerian Nollywood music business, and also K1 the Ultimate, Kwamwan. So many returns because of social media. I mean, that man did something sort of like a trap album, so you get what I'm saying when I'm talking about stuff like that. Well, it was a good one and solid stuff, really. So I'm going to allow Gwega now to talk about Bala Etse Baladins, Conakry,
yeah,
to Fayetteville.
Conakry to Fayetteville, episode 75, yes, right? Episode 75.
Yep.
Jayco is my pastor. I'm a big fan of his music. And yeah, this was an episode where we got to break down or talk about his music and also talk about Bala Etse Baladins, the group from Conakry in Guinea, West Africa, that made amazing music. What's the genre again that they did? I can't remember the name of the genre, but they made amazing guitar-based music in West Africa. I keep remembering David Zay, and when we talk about traditional African music of the 70s and 80s, David Zay always comes to mind. In fact, I play the song in my head.
Of course, it does.
I play the song in my head. I always play it in my head when it comes to that. But this particular episode was great because it's been on my mind for the longest. I heard Can't Get Enough by J. Cole featuring Trey Songz for the first time in 2011, thereabout, 2010, 2011. So it's been 11 years that tune, that sample has been playing in my head. So people who know that song would already know the sample I'm talking about. It's pretty common. It's the song that's like a bridge in the chorus. It's laced under even the raps, even the chorus by Trey Songz. So it's a very pretty rhythm, very interesting rhythm. I used to think it was Spanish because of the way it sounded. So I enjoy that sample. I love it. So it was interesting for us to like delve into the works of Bala Etse Baladins in Guinea Conakry and how J. Cole was able to sample that. J. Cole is from Fayetteville, North Carolina in America, and you know, that inspired the title of the episode. But also in the episode, we talked about Nate Dogg sampling Atlantic Star.
That's it. Let's get closer. That's sampled by Nate Dogg.
Okay, Nate Dogg, yes. That's the other side of it. I'm not too much of a fan of that, so I think I'm just going to...
I think that was it. Nobody Does It Better Ever.
Yeah, Nobody Does It Better. That's what I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, Let's Get Closer is by Atlantic Star, but it was sampled on Nobody Does It Better by Nate Dogg.
Got it. So yes, that's the way it went. Nate Dogg sampling, I almost said Ira Star. Good. Atlantic Star. Yeah, so check out that episode, share it and let people know about it. I think it was interesting that we had an opportunity to talk about Atlantic Star. They are one of our favorite groups of all time as a podcast. And also, Nate Dogg is the hook guy, the chorus guy for hip-hop in the early 90s.
No, Human Auto-Tune.
In the early 2000s and all of that. So, Akon is what Nate Dogg used to be, quote-unquote. And now, I think the person who does that would be, I can't even pick a name, maybe Justin Bieber much later. And then, not Giveon, Jeremiah at some point, and then there was T-Pain, and then there was, you know, the other guys who did hip-hop hooks. So that's pretty much episode 75. 76, what did we do?
Yeah, for 76, and now we're getting closer. Iyogogo and Fine Ballad in Yoruba. Now, we spoke about two songs, two major songs that were sampled. Shola Alesin Obani, Onyeka Wenu's song. Now, Onyeka Wenu's song, Iyogogo, came off from Golden Songs Volume 2 that was released in 1984. Iyogogo is a classic. I think probably one of the most impactful songs of the 1980s, apart from One Love by Onyeka Onwenu. And this is like for a fact. It's because it was just solid. Everybody knew Iyogogo at some point. In fact, Iyogogo is so popular that even people that are not from the southern eastern part of Nigeria, they just know the song by default. So like they would sing it the moment they hear it. That's how popular it was. And I think it was played on NTA a lot and on radio too. So that's why it's like almost like a very I don't know whether I can use the word staple sound. Can I use that, Goiga? Can I say it was one of the staple sounds of the 1980s? Is that possible? Can I say that?
I don't know if I agree, but I don't know enough to know. So,
I think we should both agree that it was probably not, you know, the best of the best. It was just one of those songs that just stuck around and has been there ever since.
Yeah, I guess. Right.
Maybe that's a better way to put it. That's why I wanted to ask you. Well, we did, and then we spoke about Shola Listen's, you know, song, which, but let's talk about the fact that first time, in the first part of the show, Oyeka Winu's Yogogo was sampled by P Square on Bankalat. It wasn't the best sampling, to be sincere. P Square have done a whole lot better than that in the past. So I wouldn't, you know, laud them a lot for this one, but it was a proper sample still, you know, but not the best. And then on the other side, we spoke about Shola Listen. Shola Listen is an amazing artist, amazing gospel artist. I still think she's one of the best out there. She has been doing, you know, great songs for a while now. And when you always think about her, you think about that first, you know, that first song that you remember. Ife-be-a-g-o-ro. You know that. What's the name of that woman again? Oh, what's her name? The lady that did the movie. Is that Bimbo Akintola?
I think it was Bimbo Oshin. Now that I have forgotten.
Bimbo Oshin, yes. Bimbo Akintola is the other lady. Bimbo Oshin, yeah. Correct.
Okay, then.
Bimbo Oshin is the fair lady. Bimbo Akintola is the dark-skinned lady. So, yeah, Bimbo Oshin, yeah. She did that one. I think that was her first production, If I Be a Jewel. And off that album, the other song that we sampled. Wait, please remind me of the song that was sampled on Where.
Where is Aye Ofe by Shola Listen?
Oh, Aye Ofe, oh, Aye Ofe. I can't sing for SH. That was a good one. I really liked it. Shola Listen is still, she's still around today making proper music. She's still available. She still has her music worldwide, you know. On the internet, you can get it and you listen to it. And Tenny did a really, really good stuff with that on Where. On that, that's her first album. And you know, we had a couple of hits off that album, but I feel like Where was one of those silent hits or silent good songs. And this particular episode, we spent quite a time, over an hour actually, talking about Shola Listen Obani. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy every single part of it. And now we are going to move on from that particular 76 to the last episode, that is 77, which was First Act 77, featuring the big man. The great man, actually happy. I don't know how you pulled it off. But you got big ups to you on that. For bringing in a couple of people. Shout out to us. A couple of people have listened to the episode and they have gotten feedbacks. And a lot of people have said, it's so amazing to listen to the lady on the talk. You know, he knows the onions. And it was really cool. First Act 77.
He's doing amazing work with the documentation of Yoruba music. From the 20s, 1930s or 40s. It goes all the way back and he continues to track that story. Meanwhile, thank you to Biodun Ajibade. He was a plug. It took only a text and he sent me Mr. Dilly's number. And after that, I texted him everywhere. He wasn't active on some platforms until I got his WhatsApp and he quickly responded. It was so, you know, large-hearted and welcoming to be part of our episode. In fact, he was busy at the time he obliged to record us, so we deeply appreciate that. And we'll do more of that. More music journalists, music broadcasters will be on this on this podcast as we go along. But yeah, that's that. Episode 77, not so much to say. Dele Adeyanju helped us make sense of what the event was about and how it was received by Nigerians in Nigeria. There was a lot of shenanigans about the cost government incurred in hosting the event, the impact on Nigerians, the connection between the Black American society or the Black movement and Africans, specifically Nigerians, and how we are able to move forward from there. Why hasn't First Act happened again after 1977, from 1977 to date? What's the post-mortem or what's the after of First Act, apart from the city we built in Lagos? What else is there about First Act? What's left of the idea? So that's pretty much how we explored it. The African acts that were on the stage of Festac, the Nigerian musicians that made albums out of it, the people who broke even out of that event, some of the tiny details we talked about on episode 77. It was amazing one more time to have Dele Adeyanju join us for that episode. And yeah, this is 78, and we have recapped all of the last 12 episodes. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, really exciting times ahead, I must tell you, too. Apart from this one, I'm really already looking forward into the future. There's so much to come, and there's so much to get in. Now, the next time we would be doing this, I think that would be episode 83 or 82 or thereabout.
No, that's too close. That would be 80. That's 90, actually.
81, right?
91. That should be
91. Oh, 91. I'm sorry, I missed that up. 91. So yeah, it's going to be a good time. And one thing that we are trying to do is to be able to get this through as fast as possible, get closer to 100, and then probably celebrate it with something. But yeah, that's it from us for episode 78. We'll be back again with 79 very soon into your ears again, and to talk about more samples. Enjoy all those ones we've spoken about already. And if you want to listen from episode 1, of course, they're in all platforms. Check up on your Spotify and Apple Music, anywhere you get your pod from, just check Sample Access Podcast and you would get it. You know, the happy boys behind the wheels of steel, making stuff pop.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. Shout out to Nelson. Shout out to everybody on the other side. Follow Sample Access Pod on Twitter, Sample Access Podcast on Instagram, and please support us everywhere. You can share our podcast episodes. You can tell other people about us. We appreciate all of that. My name is Guiga. On behalf of Nelson, we'll see you next time.